Morning, Tom. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good. After the game we played here coming out of this last break, Rex Ryan said that his teams give you the hardest time, if you don't admit it or not. He said, that was the quote, right? Whether you admit it or not.
Right.
Is that true? Would you say that's true? You want to admit it right now that Rex Ryan's defense gives you the hardest time?
Well, we haven't, I think the last four games we played against them, we haven't played very well, and they've all kind of come down to the last possession. So it's just it's frustrating to be in those situations where we're just not, playing to the way that we're capable. But it's also, it's hard to win in the NFL, and it's hard to win on the road against a good division rival. So it was a great win for our team, and I thought, our defense really made some huge plays. We made a couple plays here in the second half to help us win, but, I would love to have played a lot better in the first half and put a lot of pressure on those guys, but they did a good job kind of keeping us off balance and ended up making it a pretty tough game.
What do they do differently than other teams do? Does the Jets do something different? Is there a difference between, say, the Jets or, I don't know, other teams you play during the year, why the numbers might be different?
Well, they got a good team. I mean, they got a good defensive front. They put pressure on the quarterback. They got good guys in the middle of the defense that gets things coordinated. They got a good scheme. They keep you off balance. They give you a lot of looks, and we know them really well. I mean, they've been in a lot of close games with us, so they have a lot of confidence they could play us well. And certainly after the first half, us being down 10-7, they feel like they're in the game and they got a great chance to win. So I know the record was what it was, but they certainly played, their best yesterday. When you watch them play the Bills and get beat by 38 points, I don't really think we played the same team.
Right.
So, we just, like I said, we kind of sputtered early and gave them a lot of confidence, and that's never, a great thing to do. But like I said, I'm glad we made some pretty key plays there in the fourth quarter.
Their issues obviously are on offense, and that's not your concern. Defensively, they create problems. And I was just, we were just talking about this, Tom, that I think all four sacks, there wasn't one guy who just beat his guy and got to you, with some great spin move or something. There was two or three or four guys meeting at the quarterback. What does that mean? What is that? Is that a total breakdown on the part of you guys, or how do you explain that they were getting two or three or more guys to you?
Yeah, it's. I think it's a communication issue, and you always kind of find that when you play those guys, they got a lot of hybrid types. So they got guys that can drop, they got guys that can rush. They try to, it's technical, but they try to, basically they all line up on the left, and then the snap of the ball, they all run out of there, and everyone blitzes on the right, or they all line up on the right, and everyone blitzes on the left. So they just do a good job of kind of disguising some things, and then, you're kind of prepared for these blitzes, and then they just give you a regular defense, and then you just settled in on a regular defense, and then they give you another blitz. So they do a really good job of kind of spinning the dial on you, and then when they don't, they've got, good enough players on the front that can cause disruption. I mean, Muhammad Wilkerson is one of the best players in the league. Sheldon Richardson's a really good young pass rusher. Babin is giving everyone problems. Yeah. Copels is always a force. So they just got a lot of good players, and when they create a little bit of confusion and hesitation, then they're able to get to the quarterback. So, it's a kind of game where you really need to play from ahead and keep them off balance. And we just could never really get ahead. We got a little bit ahead there at the beginning. They scored. We're behind until the start of the fourth quarter, really. And then, we played a little bit better there in the fourth quarter. But it was just a game that, could have went either way. I'm glad it went our way. But it was just a tough game.
Hey, we know Edelman was up. We know Amendola had a nice game, perhaps his best game of the year. But we were just discussing this, Tom. Maybe you can enlighten us. What kind of role does a guy like Edelman have in reading the pressure you're going to get, the blitz, and reacting to it? We know he's a hell of a player. We know how tough he is. We know his great hands. But is that something that maybe goes under the radar, that he can see that you're going to be pressured and break off his route or sit somewhere where you know he'll be?
Yeah, I mean, Julian's become really one of our most dependable players, if not our most dependable player. So when you remove that, you know, whoever you put in there, and it doesn't matter who you put in there, and we have confidence in all the guys that go in there, but you take away your most dependable guy. There's a reason why Julian plays as much as he does, because he's always doing the right thing. He's always lined up in the right spot. He understands the urgency and the timing in the passing game. He's got great anticipation. He and I have played so much football together that, you know, there's a lot of things that you can talk about over the course of the week. And then when the game happens, you know, those things kind of get thrown out and you react and you anticipate and you be a football player. And Julian's really that kind of player. So it's, you know, great that Danny was able to, you know, play. Danny's always had a role, and Danny, you know, a lot of plays Danny made yesterday, he's obviously so capable of making. He made, you know, some really good ones. We just, you know, we got to, as a unit, you know, we got to be able to run the ball. We got to be able to play action pass. We got to be able to spread teams out. We got to be able to, you know, convert third down, score in the red area. You know, we just, all those things play a factor in scoring points. And when your communication isn't great, you make a lot of unforced errors. And, you know, it's even harder to score points, especially when, you know, you got to go 80 yards. And there was early in the game, we had to do that. And we didn't do a very good job of stringing together enough good plays or any good plays to really make a dent in that defense.
Tom, when you're held to 52 yards in the first half, is there a point where you say, hey, you know what, why don't we try the two-minute? Why don't we go to hurry up? Why don't we try to do something different here? What was said at halftime when you're under 60 yards?
Not a lot of positives, I'll tell you that. We just, like I said, it's tough when you're not executing, and I think just everyone needed to focus on what their job was and then do a better job of it, because we weren't doing a very good job of it.
Do you campaign for the hurry up to 2 minute? Because not only is it effective, but you seem to enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome to do. It's a great tool to have, and I think it's a you know, you just got to balance it with good execution, and you know it's always been a good tool for us. So the communication of it and getting that across on the road is more challenging than at home. Now, we still do it, and we still do a good job of it, but we just. Even when we had that 2 minute, we got the ball down there on third and two, and we didn't convert, which I wish we would have been able to convert. But it was just one of those things. We just for the first three quarters, you know, there wasn't a lot of positives. So
was it as confusing on the field as it was? Maybe you two guys weren't as confused as I was on television on that fourth down when it looked like they had it a yard short,
yeah.
Half a yard short. I heard them say, and then they said it was a first down. It didn't look like they gave a signal.
Oh, it was confusing.
It was a bad angle. It had to be.
You're on the field. Did it look like it was an obvious first down? Did it look close? I mean, what was going on there? Because for us, and I saw on Twitter at the time, it just seemed real confusing from a viewing perspective.
It looked like a great call to me. So, I was first down, great. Let's go. And then they went to the review. And once they go to the review, I mean, it's hard to overturn those reviews if it's not clear. So especially on spotting the ball type situations. When they pulled the chains out, you know, I don't know which part of the ball has to cross the link of the chain or the stick, or I don't know what it is, but and it was obviously close and he was decisive calling it, but it wasn't by much, I'll tell you that.
Hey Tom, around here the fans, Patriot fans, media, we can't dislike Rex Ryan. Everyone likes him. I mean, he's done there.
Well,
in New York.
I like him. That's not true. A lot of fans here don't like him. I like him. That's not true.
I disagree with you. I think Patriots fans, even if they hate
the
Jets,
they like having him around.
Even if they hate the Jets, they can't hate Rex Ryan. Do you feel the same way? Do you like the guy?
I've never thought about that. I never really thought about that. I mean, I think he's a great coach. I have a lot of respect for him. I don't know him as a person. I know the players who have played for him really play hard for him. So I don't know him personally at all.
What was said at the end of the game or post game? You bumped into him in the hallway.
Yeah.
What was that? Just a cordial greeting?
Yeah, it was. I walked out of our locker room and I was going into the media room and he was just walking by. So I didn't see him after the game, so I just shook his hand and, you know, wished him luck.
I want to go back to that 2 minute, or at least part of it. In the old days, and you probably have talked to quarterbacks from bygone eras, they called their own plays all game. I'm pretty sure, you know, Johnny Unitas didn't defer to any coach. He called his plays. Would you like to go back to those days? Would you? Do you think you'd be just as effective if you were out there calling all the plays?
Oh, it'd be so hard to do now.
Would it?
It's the game is just so different. It's a, the personnel substitutions are so different than the way they used to be. The formations, we have, 170 or 180 plays on the call sheet. So it's just the football's taken. I mean, they used to have, 8 or 9 or 10, or I don't know. But it wasn't like, what it is now that it's multiple formations, multiple schemes, multiple personnel groupings, motions. You're all trying to create some type of advantage by the way you line up or the personnel group you have in. And, football is all about angles, so that would be impossible to do now. Right. Maybe a couple plays a game you could do it. I mean, could you line your guys up and call a play? Yeah, would it be the best play? I mean, that's what, you have some of the best coaches in the league, and we have the best coach in the league at doing it, Josh, to formulate those things. So,
do you do it in the best buddies game, or do they send the plays in for that?
See, nobody, I do, but I'll tell you the difference. No, it's the same group out there every time. You get the same matchup every time. There's no rules. There's no formation. No one has to be on the line of scrimmage. You're going to get the same defense on every play, so it's not too hard.
And you never, just like when you played, just like in the real games, you don't throw the ball to Fourier at all, right?
Exactly. Fourier always seems to find a way to catch it. So, believe me, I've thrown a lot of balls to Fourier.
Scorier is his nickname.
Never enough. No, never enough.
No, never enough for him. Actually, he was never one of those guys that always complained about not getting the ball.
Really? He seems like he'd be a whiner.
Who's the all-time complainer?
It's got to be Moss. It's got to be Moss.
My guess, I'd say Moss, no.
All-time complainer about getting the
Donald
ball.
Donald Hayes.
Don't say complainer. Just say the guy who always said, I'm open. For me. Right. You got to throw it to me. Got to be Moss.
Good question. That's a great question. It's a good thing when they want the ball. I would say Julian's a little bit of a complainer, but in a good way. Because when they want the ball, then it's a good thing when they want the ball. You don't want someone that's going to, defer to all the other guys. But it's also a problem when a guy's like, I was wide open, it had been a touchdown. And then you watch the film the next day and there's three guys on him.
Right.
And then I'm going like, what are you talking about? So they lose a little bit of credibility when that comes up.
Hey, Tom, if Marcus Mariota picks up the phone and somehow reaches you in the offseason, or Jameis Winston, or one of the top quarterbacks, what's the single greatest piece of advice you could give them for success in the NFL?
Well, I don't know if there's just one piece. There's a lot that it takes. And, to be successful it's in anything, it just takes good decision-making. So that would be my first evaluation on what kind of decisions you make. When you're presented with an A or B option, when you choose the right ones on a consistent basis, I think you're set up for success no matter what you choose. And that's on and off the field, especially as it relates to a quarterback. So if you choose the wrong decisions on a consistent basis, then, it's hard to change those things. So, you just try to do the right thing on and off the field. You try to be a good representative for your team. And then there's all the other things that come into play.
Well, we know we went over this last week. All the things that you do, the eating right, sleeping, hydrating,
Facebook page.
But we know you like to get to bed early. Tonight, that's a tough one though, because this is a big Monday night game that's going to affect your life. Will you stay up and watch? And how much does it mean if Denver loses? Obviously, next Sunday for you, everything changes.
Yeah, I'm going to stay up and watch at least, through the first half. If it gets too late. But, this is an important one for us, so I'll definitely be kind of glued to this one.
And I know you don't know, but if Denver loses, you play half the game Sunday? What do you think?
I hope not. I mean, I'd love to go out there after the last, few weeks of football. I'd love to go out there and see if our offense could put together, the best – the best 60 minutes of football that we've put together in a long time. So it's a, you know, we've been up and down as of late, and we got to start, you know, really putting some great football together here in these next, you know, we got the bye, so we got to be able to win this week, and then we get the bye and then play at home, and if we take care of business, hopefully we can take care of business the first week of the playoffs and go from there. So, you know, our everything's ahead of us. It's amazing you can play 15 games and still nothing's decided and everything's ahead of you, but that's the way the NFL is.
But you have a lot of banged up guys, so if you obviously that's the most important thing, right? Denver wins loses tonight, there's got to be a handful of guys who you can rest Sunday, and that is going to affect that's going to affect the whole team.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys that could probably use, you know, a little time off, but you know, at the same time, this is football season, and you know, you play through whatever you got, and you know, you deal with those things when your season ends. So all those things are coaches' decision. I mean, I want us to go out and win. That's what I want. I don't care about, you know, resting. I want to go out there and try to kick some butt. That's what I want to do.
All right, time now for the QB question of the week, brought to you by your New England Cadillac dealers. Visit NewEnglandCadillac.com for your exceptional offers. The Michigan job. Nick Harbaugh is going to get it, I guess, would be my first question. My second is, do you have any voice, any role? Do you place a phone call? Are you involved at all in this process?
Not really. I mean, I don't even know who does decide those things. I know, you know, that some players text me and former players and so forth, but it seems like there's a lot of momentum, you know, with him and all that, you know, the media reports, but you never know if those are true or not true. So, you know, he's obviously a great coach. He's been a great coach in the pros for a long time. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen, I'm sure, you know. That, who knows? I have no idea.
Do you think expectations at schools like that in Nebraska are almost unrealistic now? If a guy wins 9 or 10 games for a few years, it seems like he gets bounced. I mean, certainly Pelini. Do you feel like that's...
Well, one of those wins has to be Ohio State.
Ohio State, I understand. Yeah, I'm just saying overall...
$7 million for beating Ohio State.
It seems like the expectations have changed from, say, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, it is. I would say, that's very true. That was strange at Nebraska. And Michigan, I'm not sure, you know, what the decisions were. It wasn't a great year. Last couple of years haven't been great. And college football seems a lot about finding the best athletes. So if you don't get the best athletes, it's hard to win. And the guys in the SEC and the guys, you know, some of those schools in the Pac-10, Ohio State always seem to get good athletes. So I'm sure that's where a lot of the focus, you know, goes. And if your guys are bigger, stronger, faster, I would say 90% of the time you win in college. You know, in the pros, it's very different because everybody has those skills. Everyone's big and fast and strong, and a lot of it comes down to coaching and preparing your guys to, you know, find the edge that you need to kind of separate yourself, and you got to go out there and execute it. So just a different game in college than it is in the pros. And for the coaches, you know, their roles and expectations are different. I mean, I would say it's much more recruiting-based, and then, you know, some of the great coaches like Saban, you can see he's a great recruiter and a great, you know, scheme type of coach. So that's why I think they're probably always up there as one of the best teams in the country.
All those great athletes at Ohio State, could they have gotten into Michigan?
I wish we'd find a way to get some of those guys in and start winning some football games. I'll tell you that. So
I'll bet Harbaugh, that's his priority number one is getting them, you know, getting them past admissions.
I know, which was hard to do at Stanford. So and he still won there. Yeah, that's probably the toughest place to do it, and they still won.
All right, Tom, we'll have a good Christmas. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, I guess.
Great, guys. Thanks. Merry Christmas.
You too, Tom.